session number 22623, Reel 1.
Sydney Leach, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
In Westminster.
Which year was this?
1916.
Did both your mother and father come from Westminster?
No. My family name originates actually from Norfolk. And of course, I never knew my father. He was killed 3 months after I was born, in 1916.
As a soldier?
Yes.
Which regiment was he in?
That's unsure. I'm unsure about that. All I know from what's been passed down from the various parts of the family was that he originally had one of the first taxis in London, the old fashioned, and they took, apparently called him up, both him and his taxi, to draw the guns and that over there. We actually still don't know, and the Imperial War Graves Museum have no record, and I've written, and they discovered there was only 17 leeches in the First World War, and unfortunately the very small things that we can tell them about my dad, they've been unable to trace even his...
Was your mother a Londoner?
That again, I'm not sure. All I know is that for a while, as a small boy, I lived with my granny at near a little place just off Vauxhall Bridge Road there. So I'm not quite sure of that. I believe that my parents, my granny, originally on that side, originated from Ostia.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Westminster?
Yes. I went to a school down by Horse Ferry Road. And in those days, I can always remember my school opposite on the other side of the road. And we used to have to go, do you know where the Horticultural Hall is in London? Mm. Square, isn't it? Yeah. Well, we used to pass by and very near up to where the London College in that area. And the school, Bedeck Coots was a school, and it was a school, the playground was right on top of the building. So when we went to play, we used to have to go to, and right opposite, there was a big paint factory where you could see them making the paint in these big vats. But that's where I went to school there, right next door to St. Stephen's, Westminster. And it was there that... I went to Sunday school and that sort of thing there. And one of my brothers was the deputy organist at St. Stephen's at that area.
How old were you when you left school?
Well, you see, what happened was that my mum was very, very ill and we lived in Charwood Place in a four-storey high. This house is still there. And my mother married again, and she married a man, a chap that had lodgings in, and he was a gold and silversmith, and had all his indentures on a leather parchment. And she married him, and this Mr. Coles, he... developed, I can remember, when I was still very, very young, a throat infection. and a throat infection. And as a youngster, I can remember we used to have to go up to Warwick Street, where the market was there, off of near Victoria Station there, and get big lumps of ice off the ice cubes. And that was the only thing sucking these portions and fissures of ice that kept his throat open. My mum, of course, developed, I'm told, TB and that sort of thing, and was always in and out of the hospital at Fulham. And I had one sister, and we were a family of three brothers and a sister, and eventually there was one child, Mary, from the second marriage. Well, in my mother's illnesses, and she used to struggle and keep going, but every now and again had to go back into hospital. And it's from that. Now, one of my brothers, the eldest one, was a crippled boy. And when he was young, they'd be been to Greenwich Park, and in those days they had these long seats in which were just on two concrete planks, and playing on the seat, he fell off, and of course the seat, and doubled up his leg. Well, my mum and them took him back on the river cruises on that used to go up the river from Greenwich up to Westminster, and St Thomas's Hospital then, as you may remember, was at Hyde Park Corner, and they took them to the hospital there. And I'm told this, that for some reason or other, they never made a real check of his leg until he'd been in about a fortnight, although they looked after him. By that time, they were too late. So, of course, what happened, of course, his leg was like a withered leg. And even when he died, he had sort of a leg of a boy, 8, 9, 10, and this huge, great boot. Well, he was sent, they got him into a school at Chaley's, where they looked after these children and learnt them to a trade, and he learnt the boot trade. And so he wasn't at home at that time, he was away at Chaley at school. And it got a bit too much for my sister, who was older than me then. Of course, I was the youngest of the Leach family. And and my next brother, I went up to my granny's, who lived up just round the corner from Vauxhall Bridge. And I stayed there for a while. It then became, obviously, a bit of a problem even to run the household then. And I then went, both the next brother to me and myself, were put into soldiers and sailors in one of their homes, and we went to a big estate just outside of Reading, around Tynehurst there, I remember, a huge great estate which had been taken over and was run. There was about 30 or 40 of us children there. And in answer to the first question, I could only have spent, I would think, about 2 years at the school in London, and then of course we were taken down, my stepfather took and he left us there and that sort of thing. So my next lot, of course, was at living in the soldier service home at Reading, beautiful estate. And eventually the people that owned it desired their property back. So all the children that were in this home at the time were fostered out. And my brother and I were the last two that were left there at the time. And we were fostered out to a widow at Knoll Hill, between Maidenhead and Reading, near Twyford. And that's where we went. Within the year or two of that, my mum died when I was 8 years old, at the age of 37. And Mrs. Dale did manage to take us up. And I always remember we had a journey up from Maidenhead to Paddington. It was the first time I'd been to Paddington Station on the train. But we were too late, of course, for the funeral, but that's when we met up. We met up at Charwood Place, which was where we lived originally. And basically saw our stepdad and that sort of thing, and went back to Knoll Hill that same night on the train. So my schooling then was at Knoll Hill, Church of England School. And the answer to it is that I left when I was exactly 14.
What was it like at the Soldiers and Sailors Home?
It was reasonable. It was reasonable. I couldn't say. Some of the children, some of the older children, were a bit rough and that sort of thing. But we were fed, and it was reasonable. I had an aunt, Louie, lived in Birmingham. She had married the sub-editor of the Birmingham Mail. And in her young days, she had been a gentry's lady, which looked after their children and took them abroad and schooled them. So she was used to visit at least this home once a year, and I always remembered when they knew she was coming, because she had an air of authority about her. We were all very, very much tidied up to greet her. And she visited once a year. And I always remember, you know, those Macintosh tins of chocolate, the big one, of toffees. She always arrived with one of these large tins of toffees. And she was shown round, and the rest of the children, including us, their two prodigies, my brother Victor and myself. He was older than me. And after she'd left, for all the time the tin had 10 held toffees, everyone received two toffees at their lunchtime. Yes. The grounds were very beautiful grounds, so of course it was luxurious to play in these grounds. But we went to school, in a school at Tilehurst, and of course we were all dressed alike. Grey jumpers and little trousers. And I always remembered, I can still remember now, us all going marching all along in this raggedy, wriggly line of 38 of us with one lady from the House of Home, of course, escorting us and going to school like a wiggly worm, you know. I could always remember people looking at us and saying, "Oh no," as though we were sort of peculiar to see us all being marched to school like that. And that's how we went. And we marched back to the home like that. But I must say that, of course, I must be very grateful. And, of course, for the Soldiers and Sailors Institution, and I've always wished them well and tried to help. And endeavour to do something for them in the way of collections or something like that when we can. I left school. I shall never forget this, and I can feel it now. Am I blundering on to
you? No.
I can always remember the local vicar was the head of the governors, and in Knoll Hill at that time there was one brickyard, and the Warners owned it, and they were on the school of governors and one or two more. And the school was right next door to, and had its schoolhouse, to the church and the church hall. And I can always remember that when it came to leaving school time, all the children were instructed to be smartly dressed. Anyway, and there again, we were too often boys in that sense. We were always in jerseys, and at that particular time, my brother, of course, being older, he asked and wanted to go home. And of course, my stepfather, yes, says yes, he could come home. So that left, after he left school, that just left me at the, with the foster family. And when it came time for me to leave school, I can always remember it. All those leaving school at that time were taken into the hall, into this hall, and marched into the hall. Of course, we never individually went. And you all, that's how it was in those days. You moved under, you were regulated, and they went in. And when we got into there, the school, there was the local vicar, the head of the governors of the school, and all the ladies and gents, on the people that had come. And we then learnt to sort of engage us with different things. The area, of course, being what it was, there was Wargrave here and Henley, Knoll Hill, there was just the one brickyard, and the rest were all farming and housing, big houses and that sort of thing. So when we got in there, there used to be all these people, and they were all put in, all in a long line and followed by the headmaster and probably one or perhaps teacher and that sort, who had our reports in their hand. In those days, you got a report which you took home twice a year, I think. And then these people used to file past you. And I always think, and that was like the old slave days when they used to walk along, and walking behind them would be, in my case, it was a Mr. Bacon, who was the head gardener and looked after the estate and the affairs of Henry Charrington, the brewer, who had moved down from North and had got this house, Kiln Green, at Kiln Green. And as they went along, they used to, and he touched the chest, put his hand there. And the headmaster then read out our school report to them, and that's how it went. And he said, yes. And they just said, well, this is Mr. Bacon, and he's, who is it? And he is engaging you to go and work at Castleman's at Kiln Green, to the stadium, and that sort of thing. And from there, that's how I started, and that's how I went my first job.
Did you have any choice in the matter?
No, not really, no. He was a nice gentleman, and a chap he was. And he'd come from up north, Tutbury, and he spoke to me, he spoke a different language to me, his voice was different. No, we didn't then, but, and that's how it was. So having chosen me, the others were still in there. And that's how I left school and entered into life as it was going to formulate then.
Did you stay in that line of work?
Pardon?
Did you stay in that line of work?
Well, now if you can work back this now, this came brought me to 1930. And if one's recollections go in there, the economy and everything in this country had stopped right down to a very, very low. And I always remember that when I went there, the Charringtons lived at Castleman's at Kiln Green, which during the war was taken over by the intelligence corps as a sort of form of college. They lived there. Henry Charrington was a most wonderful man, and he used to travel up every day to Mile End, to where the brewers were, by train from Twyford. And there was Mrs. Charrington. I believe she hadn't, he'd married her, she wasn't of a peculiar high class, really, in that sense. And they had one daughter, Nancy. When I went there, and of course they had all these cars, and when I went there, this recession had started. They had four cars at the time there, and all big cars and wonderful cars, and they had three chauffeurs. And I was to go there to learn in the house and eventually to become an additional chauffeur. But of course, this had come in, and of course they had to reduce things. And it was a terrible thing to lose two or three cars, which they did. So basically, I went there, and they had a house. They not only had a house, Castleman's, they had a property in Norway. He used to do a lot of fishing there, and they had a place at Sandgate, Kent. So they divided their time between those things, so that when they were in residence there, I was basically in the house and in the garage and the chauffeur, looking after cars and learning that sort of thing. And I got on very well with Mrs. Sheringham, the lady. I believe it was because right up until my age of 14 and even beyond, somebody had to sign once a year to say I was still alive and that Mrs. Dell could have, I think it was 15 shillings a week, which were the soldiers and sailors and she got for my keep. I know my stepdad used to, of course, help as well. I don't think it was an incumbent for him to do so, but he used to. She, of course, in those days, had two children, of course, and the village had grown up enough money to send both her boys to Chailey, one to learn gardening and the other carpentering. And the one that learned gardening became quite a top-notch rock gardener, and later on, for some time in his life, was head gardener at Wembley Park for a while. Anyway, and so when they were at Castleman's, my duties were mostly in the car. Every room and every fire was to ensure that the logs were there for the fire, and they had to be pine for this room and oak for that room and that sort of thing and that sort of thing. And they had seven staff, housemaids, cooks, and that sort of thing. My wife was who I met there and later on married. She was she had come there. She's older than me by over 3 years. She was a kitchen maid there, and my job was to be there at early and cycle. And we had to cycle Noel Hill. My brother, he was the only one that had been allowed a bike and then allowed to join the Boy Scouts and to play in the school football team. And I had always been kept there to do all the housework before I went to school in the morning, which I had to run across these fields when the school bell rang. I had to ensure that the place was clean before I went, dusted and swept and that sort of thing. And it hasn't done me any harm. I've learnt from that. She was a little bit cruel, in a sense that she used to use a brush, the edge of the brush, to give you a clout across the hands and that sort of thing. And but I suppose I have a lot to thank her for. She gave me a home, and I used to have to be up early in the morning, run across the fields to get the milk, because we lived at Bottle Green then, and Noel Hill, to get the milk and come back and then start to do my work. And then had to get to school, and before I got to school I had to do all these chores. And when I went to work to Castleman's, I used to have to help in the house, the butlers and learn about in the house and in, out in the garage and that sort of thing. And when they were away at the other houses, then of course I came under Mr. Bacon, of course, who was the head gardener. Very lovely, and I heard how I learnt sort of things about the garden and that sort of thing. And the daughter got married, and she married an officer in the Royal Berkshire Regiment and that sort of thing. But the clientele, which of course they mixed with, got Henry Charrington died, and that just left her, and we lost a very, very good gentleman and employer when he died. He was a marvellous chap. And from the farm, whenever the animals were killed and that sort of thing, he's all and was killed, every one of the staff were presented, and he personally presented them with a huge lump of beef and that sort of thing or something. When he died, they carried on, the daughter got married, and she moved away. So that meant that her Bentley went to, the Bentley went with them. So that left me then. She was, the lady, Mrs. Channing, was persuaded to go more to London and get amongst the cliques in London. So she rented a house near Regent's Park, near the zoo. But the chauffeur which she got there, Mr. Jenks, he had been the original coachman. He didn't know London. He didn't want to go to London. So a chauffeur from the London area was found, and Mr. Jenks was dismissed and whatever. This chap arrived from London and became so basically he was over me for the time in which I was connected with the cars and that sort of thing. And but he was quite a lazy man. He used to expect the cars and everything cleaned and ready for him to walk in at 9 o'clock in the morning, go into the put his cap on and get his chauffeur's togs, and them those they wore gaiters and that sort of thing, and then go into the house to get his orders for the day. Sometimes it entailed that they'd be out in the morning fox hunting or whatever, and the same car would be ordered for immediately after lunch. And she had a habit, and which is the sort of little things which one learns. At the house, it had the drive came down from the Great West, from the Bath Road, and it went round. There was a huge, great ring with a huge, gorgeous, great tree in it. And the car always had to come round this way, so the car pulled up at the front door and the steps went up the front that way. It must never come from the garage and come that way and go out. So I learned to be quite crafty in that sense. But whenever she came out of the door, Mrs. Charrington, she'd stand on the top steps and peer down at the car, and always expected it to see a clean car. Well, if she'd only come in at 12:30 and the car was ordered for an hour so late, it was a bit awkward. So what, very often, if she'd have walked around the other side, she'd have found it all splattered in mud and all from the country lanes where she'd been. But this side was clear. I got on very well, which I believe because she had to sign a form to say that I was still alive, and which of course used to go up to those that regulate the payment which would be made for her. After a while, I got sort of homesick too, and I could see that it was going to be a long time, because this particular bloke, I couldn't see him sort of stepping down or, you know, giving up something. So I know they were away at Sandgate at the time, and I said, well, one of my brothers had got married and moved out to Mitcham, and he used to come down to see us. And now and again, and he said, well, you come back, there's room for you to come back and live with us now. And so I said, well, yes, and that's how I gave up the working at Chandler's, and I moved from Knoll Hill. They came down and fetched me, had a motorbike and a sidecar, I always remember. He put my trunk in those days and all my gear in them, and he took me back to Mitcham where they lived. And eventually, I remember after about a week there, he said, right, well, we must get you, find you a job.